Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, it took 6,235 days, but it's happened, ladies and gents. It has happened. A goalless draw in El Clasico, the first since November 2002. And some might say, do you know what? Maybe it was 2 points dross from either Barcelona or Real Madrid. But hey, they extended their joint kind of lead at the top of La Liga. Barcelona, of course, in prime position at the moment on 36 points, but leading with goal difference, of course, over Real Madrid. But Sevilla losing, so 5 points clear of Sevilla. Both of those teams now are. This is, of course, the El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. Barcelona first. As always, Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm all right. I guess that I haven't actually heard from many. Obviously, I'm not in the bubble in the circle of Real Madrid fans, but if it's anything like Barcelona fans, then both teams' fan bases are, I'd say, riotous at best.
Riotous.
Well, I think both teams were frustrated that they didn't get the 3 points. And this is one of those, just, it felt like an odd match from start to finish. And of course, there was nothing to be said about what was happening away from the match and out of the stadium, or what happened in the 56th minute with the beach balls and the protests. And there certainly felt like there were other things obviously going on other than just the match. So I think in particular, the last 15, 20 minutes or so, right as Arturo Vidal and Ansu Fati came in the game, you could definitely feel that Barcelona at least were fighting for a draw. And they were just happy to get a 0-0 draw. And that's not anything you'd ever expect to think or to say about the final result of El Clasico, that both teams would be happy for a 0-0 draw, while the fan bases were all, I think, both desperate for some kind of result or life or a result for their side.
Yeah, it's not what we've become used to with El Clasico over the years, certainly. And there was so much around it, Dan. You talk about Ansu Fati there, became the youngest player to feature in El Clasico this century. You look at the fact that Lionel Messi was equaling Xavi's El Clasico record of 42 appearances. That was amazing. Nelson Semedo, his 100th Barcelona appearance. There were so many things, so many stats around it. You thought, okay, it's going to be a good one. And it was just a bit of a damp squib.
Well, I think having the match postponed to that Wednesday helped out a bit as well. I was in New York City at the local Peña, which is held at a bar. And there just did seem to be, I'd been there for previous El Clasicos, and there just, as much as there were many, many people, it just seemed like a lot of faces and eyes who's staring at the television. And there certainly was just not only just there a lack of energy, but it really did seem like the wind was taken out of its sails. And I think the game plan from Valverde was a large part of that. Now, Sergio Busquets being taken out of the lineup for, if we're to believe Valverde, in illness, which I think there's no reason not to believe that, because Sergio Roberto had not played in the midfield other than the Catalan Cup since October. So to put him in there must have been a last-ditch idea that Valverde had to do on the fly to have Busquets coming out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. All that said, I think that the high press from Real Madrid, Zidane had the right game plan from the start. Valverde's team, though, is built defensively and in the right ways where they didn't concede. And it was two really, really good saves in the first half from Ter Stegen. And Piqué, I thought, had a phenomenal game as well. Lenglet, not so great about breaking that press with his passing, but Lenglet also very good defensively. But other than that, Barcelona defensively had it. And offensively, they didn't really have much going on. And even tactically, I think what took the wind out of the sails from the fan base, even at the Camp Nou, was in years past, and I had said this in the preview, whether we talked about on the Barcelona podcast or on the YouTube channel, I expected it to be Fede Valverde, who, you know, I thought was decent in this match. I expected him to be man-marking Messi, as we've seen Casemiro do in the past, or as we saw Pablo Maffeo from Girona back in the day came to mind as well. And yet, instead of man-marking Messi, they tried to basically use that press to create a separation between De Jong, Rakitic, and Sergio Roberto in the midfield, and it worked to great effect, where the three midfielders, those trios, there was no triangles to break the pressure. It would be Lenglet giving to De Jong, and then De Jong having to dribble his way out of trouble. I thought De Jong was the best Barcelona player for all those reasons I just mentioned, and yet that press just continued coming, and Casemiro was nearly 10 to 15 yards away from Messi at all times. Madrid actually funneled the ball into Messi at times, knowing that he didn't have any other outlets because the game plan was to shut down everything else around him. And unlike former times against the Argentine Wizards, this actually worked.
Well, Valverde, who you mentioned there, is well done. That's 7 Clásicos unbeaten for him. That's equaled Pep's record from, you know, many moons ago, back in 11-12. So we're kind of seeing a good trend for him. And just to stick on Valverde as well, I noticed a couple of quotes he mentioned about January. January not far off, of course. The transfer window across Europe going crazy with loads of rumours. But he's saying, no, I'm happy. I don't expect any modifications. Do you believe him?
Yeah, I do. I think my greatest frustration, it's not just about one individual player, but one of the undertones of this, I think, from on the Barcelona side of things, that you saw Fede Valverde, and we had about our previous week against Real Sociedad had seen Martin Odegaard, who's on loan from Real Madrid. Hakimi plays for Dortmund. And it seems like Real Madrid have all of these players from 21 to 23, either out on loan or growing for Los Blancos. And they've already turned the page. They sold Ronaldo. They're moving in. They've already clearly jump-started their next cycle. And we see Barca is at the very end of theirs with Messi, Suarez, Pique, Alba, and Busquets and that whole group. And Rakitic and Vidal included, they're also over post-30 and not getting any younger. And yet we saw from Barca that clearly the lack of legs and lack of youth was a part of that. And Valverde is both taking the blame for what the board has done transfer-wise over the last few years, and yet the frustration comes to Valverde because it seems like to Debo, when we speak about rotation and giving rest to both Lenglet and Piqué, Todibo has an ability to both dribble into the midfield, and he also has much better line-breaking abilities on the ball than Lenglet does. But Lenglet is a much, much superior defender, obviously, with a lot more experience, and you're always going to go with him in those instances. But that said, it's not just about Todibo. When you couple that with, again, Ricky Puig, in a vacuum, bringing up a Barcelona B player isn't the biggest deal if it's just one individual player, sure. But now you're talking about Alenya being frozen out, having his development stall. And then Puig never getting an opportunity, staying with Barcelona, being in the third division for another season. Todibo not getting any minutes. And then the most likely thing that's going to happen in January is just Todibo sold to United or Milan or some other club for 10-15 million euros, which doesn't really move the needle financially for the club in a way that being able to resell Coutinho for 60 or 70 might be able to do. And yet you see Barca have a really promising center back, and he's going to be the one discarded. Not Rakitic, not Vidal. It's going to be nothing about turning a page. It's going to be all about trying to win now with what the fan base believes to be a system that isn't really working. Again, Barca seem to be on the back foot against most teams.
It's a great point you raised, to be fair, Dan. And yeah, I mean, if Todibo was to leave, like I said, that's not ripping up a rule book and potentially changing, not that you need to change the strategy necessarily at the club, but changing the mindset, changing just something that needs to eventually start this process. Like you said, like Real Madrid have done with Cristiano Ronaldo and a few others, starting this process of out with the old, in with the new, and not necessarily doing it in an aggressive, scandalous way, but just recognising that actually things do need to change if Barcelona are going to continue being the Barcelona that we know and love, of course. And we've now got a small winter break. Alaves are up, of course, tomorrow. Then there's a break until the 4th of January. So what I'm going to do with you, Dan, is that this is the last El Clásico show of the year. It's the last El Clásico show of the decade. Now, if you consider where Barcelona and yourself covering Barcelona as well were in 2010 right through to now, how far you've come, how far the club have come, if they have come far or if they've regressed, do you think? If you think of your highs and lows of the past decade, how would you sum it all up, I suppose? I know that's difficult to do that in the space of 5 minutes or so, but for you, the summing up of the past decade, perhaps your greatest moment as a Barcelona fan.
Well, fortunately for you, you did lob me a pretty easy one. Francesco and I have already pre-recorded the show that's going to come out over the holidays, which is our team of the decade, where we drafted basically the best 11. We both get a best 11. I did, not to give anything away, I won the coin toss, so I, of course, get Lionel Messi. but yeah, when it comes to the whole decade and all the great players that have played for it, it has been an odd thing to see that we started this decade, and I want to, I am on, obviously, the UK radio, but I thought in 2011 that Champions League victory over Manchester United, that 3-1, not only, I think, is that an nadir for the decade for Barca, but that was one of the greatest football matches I've ever seen, and I think a lot of people have ever seen. I know that, yes, Rooney got the goal, but just to see the utter domination on a football field, and it made the whole world think about what was possible in terms of ball playing and possession and purposeful possession, and I think it just changed what football became for the decade. And then we saw that pushback in 2014 at the World Cup when it became about counterattacking. Real Madrid wins three Champions Leagues because of that style with counterattacking. And there has been a correction in tactics in world football because of what Barca were at the start of this decade. And that just tells you how good Messi and Xavi and the end of Puyol and Dani Alves and Iniesta and all of them were all those years ago. And it's not necessarily an insult to Sergio Roberto, who's become the right back since Dani Alves left, or Umtiti, who can't really stay healthy. I try to compare him to Puyol. And then Suarez obviously coming in, winning that treble. The treble back in 2015 with Neymar and MSN, and just how good they were. And then Neymar leaving the club. And I think Neymar, his exodus and going to PSG, certainly messed up the timeline and what Barcelona, both the fans and the board, believed was going to be the next 3 to 5 years at Barcelona. And I think his move and his choice to do that did create a wrinkle that I think the club is still dealing with now. And we are good. And a lot of the blame and ire is being put on Valverde. And I think when it comes down to 10, 15 years from now, I think there'll be less blame on him and more blame on just a structural understanding of having Neymar leave and then not being able to not only replace and use that money properly, but to have any direction after he left.
I couldn't agree more there with that one, Dan, to be fair. I like how you put it, messed up the timeline, messed up the juju, kind of living in a flashpoint almost at the moment, Barcelona. And the game you mentioned as well, that Champions League final, yes, I watched an interview with Wayne Rooney earlier on this week, actually. He was speaking to Gary Neville and they were discussing those two Champions League finals, of course, the one in 2009 as well, where they said, you know, we set it up wrong. We should have maybe not gone and tried to give Barcelona the ball. We didn't play it outright. And if we had another chance, the outcome of that game, the 2-0, might have been different, he said. However, in 2011, they were quite clearly a superior side, probably the best side they've ever played against. And you have to say, I don't think any team before that time or since that time was ever able to get the reaction that you saw from Sir Alex Ferguson with the playing of his hands and almost nervous sort of twitch that he had in the dugout. I don't think any other manager, any other team has managed to do that other than Pep Guardiola and that Barcelona side. A fantastic side, a fantastic victory and great memories as well, Dan. It's been great having you on the show over the past few months. I'm going to wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and we'll catch up in 2020, boss.
Joy, Merry Christmas to you and a Happy New Year to everybody, both Real Madrid and Barca fans, of course.
Oh, what a lovely way to finish. Dan Hilton, thank you very much. That was Dan of the Barcelona podcast there. Nice, nice and amicable with the Real Madrid boys. This is the El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. Next up, it is Los Blancos.
Love Sport.
We've got a record breaker on our hands, ladies and gents. We have a record breaker, and that record breaker is Sergio Ramos, because he, in what was a pretty drab, pretty boring, dour affair at the Nou Camp on Wednesday between Barcelona and Real Madrid in the El Clasico, the 179th La Liga El Clasico, but the 243rd El Clasico all in all. Just the ninth goalless draw between the two teams. A record breaker was Sergio Ramos. He became the player with the most El Clasico appearances. 43 appearances in El Clasicos for Sergio Ramos. That is quite some record there. On the line now to talk all about that on this, the El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. Real Madrid now. We have Matt Wiltsey from Managing Madrid. How are you doing, Matt?
Doing well, doing well. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, good, buddy. Great to have you on the line. We've only got about 8 minutes or so, which is a shame as we reach the end of 2019. Quickly, a quick summing up of El Clasico from you.
I think from a neutral perspective, it wasn't the best game, but I think from both sides, both fan sides, it was a good game, especially tactically. I thought there were a lot of little tactical battles and plot lines that were really interesting. And just to pick out some names, Casemiro was just a monster, best defensive midfielder in the world. And then Rafael Varane put in one hell of a performance at center back.
Best defensive midfielder in the world there, Casemiro. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone can touch him right now. If anyone who watched El Clasico and didn't see the type of performance Casemiro put in, then they're missing out, because he has been playing like that all season long, and he's turning into the total defensive midfielder.
Yeah, kind of turning out to be the player I think we all thought that he was going to be. I'm not going to say that he hasn't fulfilled his potential yet, but I don't think he's gone to stratospheric levels? Or perhaps because often you see with defensive midfielders now maybe getting a bit more recognition in the modern game that they used to get. We see here in England with the likes of N'Golo Kanté, with Wilfred Ndidi now of Leicester City as well, effectively Kanté's replacement at Leicester, really starting to pull up trees, and Casemiro definitely doing that for Madrid, could very much be the linchpin in that midfield should they get that La Liga title come May. Also, Zinedine Zidane as well. If we're going to be talking stats, which is what we were doing on the Barcelona section of this show, Matt, 5 matches now at the Camp Nou that Zidane is unbeaten as Real Madrid boss.
Yes, I mentioned that on the last part, the last show right before we hung up. I said, you know, Zidane hasn't lost at the Camp Nou, so that's the only thing that was keeping me thinking there might be something there for Real Madrid, and it still holds true. It's incredible. The thing I'm hoping for is that his run in the Champions League continues too. Hasn't lost a single knockout match in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's quite an incredible record, that, isn't it? And speaking of records, Matt, it is our final show of 2019. It's been a productive decade in the history of Real Madrid. It always is, really. When is it an unproductive decade? The treble, we can all talk about that, of course. 3 successive Champions Leagues on the trot. In terms of highs, lows, memories that stick out for you, I'm sure you've spoken about it quite a lot with the Managing Madrid guys yourself, but if you could sum up 2019 and the decade as a whole, from a Real Madrid perspective, what sticks out for you?
So the decade as a whole, I think the one moment that sticks out above all others, and I think all Madridistas will say this as well, is the La Decima header from Sergio Ramos in the 93rd minute of that Champions League final. Nothing will ever beat that. I think it's the most historic one of, if not the most historic, one of the most historic moments in all of Real Madrid history. In terms of 2019, I think this year, obviously, last season was just horrendous. It was a negative downward spiral. It seemed like it never ended. But now, as we're ending the tail end of this year, Zidane's finally gotten this team back into their groove, rebuilt this kind of mental fortitude that they've lacked, and I think they're really, really looking like it's going to be a strong 2020.
It is a soap opera, isn't it? It always is a soap opera with Real Madrid, as we know, Matt. But Zidane in particular, you know, the 3 Champions Leagues, like we say, on the trot, La Decima, like you say, him leaving the club, realising that maybe I need to move on now and do something different. Him returning to the club against all odds. And then the saga with Gareth Bale at the start of the summer, and now the fact that Bale's in the side. And there's always something going on. And I know that when you are a club of Real Madrid's stature, like it is with Manchester United here, really, the microscope constantly on them, scrutiny left, right and centre, regardless of what they do, nothing really ever is good enough. And you kind of feel like that's the case with Real Madrid. But second in La Liga at the moment with Barcelona, level on 36 points, just 2 points, with just 2 goals really in that, with that goal difference. How do you see the rest of the season going and bringing 2020 in? Of course, Champions League as well, Manchester City, our very own Manchester City here in England. That's a massive game coming up.
Yeah, and I think, so as for the rest of 2020 and how this La Liga season shapes up, I think a lot depends on whether or not Real Madrid can find some goals from other sources rather than just Benzema, because the defensive side of things, we've really cleaned it up. We have one of the best defenses in the league. Midfield-wise, with Casemiro and Fede Valverde now, their engines, their legs, their ability to cover so much ground puts us in a good place, and then obviously you have Cruz just picking that final pass. But in the final third, we just need a couple more goal scorers to help support Benzema. Rodrigo, 18-year-old Rodrigo, is our second striker with 6 goals. So if Madrid can find somebody else to help bang in the net, score some goals, then I think they'll be in a good position to potentially win La Liga and obviously take on Manchester City in February and March.
That's massive, isn't it? Not only for the fact that it's Man City, but the fact it's Pep.
Exactly, it is, and it's hard to make predictions now, obviously, because we're a couple months away, and we know in football how quickly things change. And I think, for me, I think the biggest thing in this duel, which really was going to turn the turn the tide on who's the favorite. I think it comes down to who's got the injuries, who's injured, and who's not. I mean, that's how close it is, and I think that's how much of a difference it'll make.
And by the way, speaking of goals, you've neglected to mention one of the attacking forces you now seem to have, mate, Thibaut Courtois.
That is true. Oh, my goodness. I mean, what a header that was. It was unbelievable. 95th minute, Thibaut comes up, 6'5", and just towers through everybody. And it was a great snapping header. I mean, I was impressed. And it would have been so much more epic if he actually scored. But credit to Benzema for pouncing on the rebound and scoring that poacher's goal in the final minute. And it was a crucial, crucial point.
Yeah, massive point, of course. We are referring to the game against Valencia last week. Thibaut Courtois coming up in the dying seconds. And a great header, like you said. And to be fair, in the mint green kit as well, which I thought looked great, like we discussed, of course, on the show last week. But it was a great finish, regardless of it being a snatched finish from Benzema. That was clearly a finish. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew that men were on the line. He was like, I'm hitting this in the roof of the net because no one is going to get it.
Yeah, no, it was... it was incredible, a dramatic finish, and again, that's the things that Don has brought. I mean, that never say die attitude, the ability to come back, to kind of get over. I mean, we had so many demons from last season, and any time Madrid went down a goal, they would just get so negative, and you could see it, and you could feel the energy. And this year with Don, they're really starting to turn it around.
Indeed they are. Matt, it has been great having you on the line. Great speaking to you in 2019. I wish you nothing but great things for the festive season. Have a great Christmas and a great new year, boss. And we will catch up in 2020.
Same to you, Matt. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Lovely stuff. That was Matt Wiltsey there from managing Madrid. Madrid hosting Athletic Bilbao on Sunday. And then lucky, lucky La Liga. They get a nice little break. Not another game until January the 4th. This has been the El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. We're going to be back in the new year. We haven't got a show for the next couple of weeks, but we'll be back in the new year here on Love Sport. We will see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.